You are listening to The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards.
If you look at the 22,000, 8.2 says you need to have prerequisites and they need to be approved by the food safety team, but it doesn't tell you what and how and where. So you really need, well, you absolutely need the two elements. You need the 22K and the PRP standards, and between them, they make wonderful music.
Hello, this is Matthew Childs, and welcome to The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards. Now, the voice you heard at the top of the episode was that of Richard Leathers, food safety expert and standards maker, and he was talking about the ISO 22002 series, the subject of this episode. Richard mentioned music, and keen listeners might have recognised the actual music played beneath Richard as part of the score from The Magnificent Seven, the 1960 Western remake of Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai. The ensemble cast, including Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen and Charles Bronson, play seven gunfighters hired to protect a small Mexican village from bandits. Why the connection? Well, just as the film features seven defenders protecting a village, the ISO 22002 series launched seven standards together. Another Magnificent Seven. Now, food connects us all. It nourishes, sustains, and brings us all together. But as food systems grow global, complex, and fast-moving, risks to safety are higher than ever. Contamination, fraud, and poor hygiene can devastate public health, brand reputation, and consumer trust. For 20 years, ISO 22000 has been the foundation of food safety management systems worldwide, setting a global benchmark for a systematic, risk-based approach. At its core are prerequisite programs, or PRPs, the everyday practices that create a hygienic environment and prevent hazards before they occur. The ISO 22002 series was developed to help organisations put these PRPs into practice. And in 2025, it has undergone its biggest transformation yet. Five of the seven have been upgraded from technical specifications to full international standards. 22002-1 for food manufacturing, -2 for catering, -4 for food packaging manufacturing, -5 for transport and storage, and -6 for feed and animal food production. And two of the seven are brand new standards, 22002-7 for retail and wholesale, and -100 for the food, feed and packing supply chain, a new universal foundation that brings consistency across all sectors. For this episode, Richard Leathers is joined by fellow food standard safety experts and standards makers, Amanda McCarthy and Angela Cunningham. I spoke to all three of them about the importance of this Magnificent Seven. And that's not all. Because it's The Standard Show, Richard, Amanda and Angela also reflect on their own standards journeys, what motivated them to get involved and what continues to inspire their involvement today. Now, before we get down to it, here's Cindy Parakill with a quick reminder.
Hey, just a quick reminder to follow, rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. Want to get in touch or find us on socials? All the links you need are in the show notes.
For this look at the ISO 22002 series, aka The Magnificent Seven, we start with Amanda McCarthy. Amanda is Business Director at BRCGS, with over 20 years' experience in food safety and quality. She chairs the BSI Standards Committee, AW90, Quality Systems for the Food Industry, and she represents the UK on international food safety standards development, helping shape global best practices. I spoke to Amanda about why clearer, more practical guidance was needed in the 22002 series, and how the new family of standards will help the food industry work more efficiently and build public trust. But I started by asking Amanda about the global context, what challenges and issues made it necessary to update and develop these food safety standards.
ISO 22000 is a really well adopted standard globally, and it covers the whole of the food chain. And that's the beauty of it. You know, it talks about animal feed, it talks about agriculture, it talks about manufacturers, processors, businesses that transport, that store food, retail food, serve food in restaurants. So it's a, you know, it's a massive kind of coverage of different categories. But we know that there's been lots of issues around the food industry globally. You know, over recent years, there are challenges around, you know, things like climate change, microbiological issues, you know, food safety incidents, all sorts of things happening that affect those different categories differently. And having a generic standard is fantastic that covers all those things. But sometimes there's things that where you need to have something a bit more tailored to those specific categories in order to move forward. So that's really what made it necessary to kind of come up with these seven additional standards related to ISO 22000.
So why was clearer, you know, more practical guidance needed in the ISO 22002 series?
So ISO 22000, you know, as I've said before, is, you know, great standard for companies that really want, you know, want the guidance to do their own thing. They know what direction they want to go in, but they don't typically then need additional help on the basics, and that's what we call PRPs, prerequisite programs. So it's what's the stuff that you need to do before you go any further. So, you know, it can be things like pest control procedures, you know, hygiene and housekeeping, you know, kind of general document control, and the things that every business really has to have in place before they go any further in the food industry. So, you know, some companies, particularly small businesses, were kind of saying, well, we need a bit more tailored guidance on that. We're not that sophisticated to be able to work it out for ourselves. So we just want a bit more help. So that's really where it came from. So obviously in the standards community, there's a lot of people with an awful lot of experience, and they could actually put those guides together for these businesses. So, you know, some companies have got enough internal resource and they've got enough technical knowledge to do it all themselves, and they don't need anything additional, but some people do. And, you know, if the more that we can give them to help them to implement a really fantastic management system against ISO 22000, the better. So, you know, if you've got that knowledge out there in the standards community and we can use it to help people that are just coming on board, you know, why not do that? Because anything, you know, it's additional support information for them to make their standards experience even better.
Well, just on that, I just want to draw down on that, because obviously we've got these new standards now. I just wonder, as a sort of a group, as a framework, really, how will they help the food industry work more, you know, more safely, more efficiently, and particularly how will it sort of build public trust in this area too?
Just having that information that is kind of accepted and known and well practiced throughout the industry. So yes, if they've got somebody else that's been working within, you know, the manufacturing sector, who's been sitting on a standards committee, who can give a little bit of insight and knowledge that can then be translated through to the standard and through to the companies, you know, then obviously that helps them to make food that is safer, to give them some guidance and some information. So I think that's just really valuable. And I think overall, you know, we're looking at how can we make food safer for the consumer. So the more information and guidance we can put out there to help people to make safe food, to sell safe food, to store safe food, to you know, kind of transport safe food, the better, really. So, you know, it's along the lines of more is always better in terms of, you know, kind of standards information.
Take us inside then, Amanda, to the standard development process here. I'm really keen to know who's been involved and why.
So it was really important in thinking about these seven standards that we had representation across the whole of the food chain within our own committee, you know, in BSI, so our committee AW90. And previously, we just had people really focusing on the manufacturing side. But, you know, this manufacturing is just kind of one of those seven sectors that we're covering within these new standards. So we wanted to make sure that we got good insights and information and technical input from all those sectors. So we actually went out, you know, with our committee manager to actually find people who could fill those gaps that we had before. So we've gone a long way towards doing that. We haven't got everybody that we want, but, you know, we have got people that are covering retail. We have got people that are covering food service and farming and agriculture. And these are the areas that traditionally have not been represented within the committee. So we think we're in a really great place going forward to just be much more representative of the whole of the food industry within our committee. So that is, you know, that's great for us. And this work has really kind of pushed us in that direction, and we want to keep that, and we're always looking to kind of bring more people on board that can bring even more engagement from those different sectors of, you know, across the whole of the food chain.
Standards affect all of us every day, everywhere. By defining good practice, they help people and organizations do things better. Each year, standards bodies publish thousands of standards, and we're always looking for more people like you to join our growing community of standards makers. We welcome applicants from all backgrounds, areas of expertise, and career stages. Our goal is simple: to bring a balance of perspectives to the table. As a standards maker, you can help improve how things are made and done, whether it's building more inclusive workplaces, improving healthcare, advancing AI governance, accelerating climate action, and much more. If you want to make a difference and help shape the world through standards, start your standards making journey today. Details on how to get involved are in the show notes.
Now, in part one, we heard from Amanda McCarthy about the broad context for the development of the ISO 22002 series. In this part two, we get a bit more into the details of the standards with Angela Cunningham and Richard Leathers. Angela Cunningham is Compliance and Quality Systems Advisor at William Grant & Sons, with over 20 years experience in the food and drinks industry. She is a member of BSI Committee AW90 and Principal UK Expert to ISO Technical Committee 34, Subcommittee 17, on Food Safety. And Richard Leathers is Global Quality Lead at Camden BRI. He's been working in food safety for more than 40 years. And he's a standards maker too, including through AW90. With Richard, the conversation is about how organisations use the 22002 series and the benefits this brings to them and consumers. With Angela, it's about the overall objectives for the standards, along with her insights into how they were developed, the sort of committee conversations that took place. But I started by asking Angela about the basics. Why are the PRPs central to food safety management?
Basically, the PRPs are the foundation of your food safety management system. They're those kind of general practices that you put in place for your organisation, maintain them, implement them, establishment, and they are the heart of your food safety system. Without them, you really don't operate as well as you possibly could do. So they're the types of things that are training, supplier management, pest control. So if you have those foundations in, you've got that environment to produce safe and good food.
Now, in terms of the objectives then of this 22002 series, could you talk me through what the main objectives are here, and how do they contribute to raising food safety standards globally?
The objectives of the series now are to lay that foundation for organisations to work with and make that a way that it's simplifying how companies can implement those PRPs that I spoke about. It's that way of simplifying what is needed for organisations, especially when operating across multiple sectors. So the main objective was to standardise and give that platform for consistency and easier integration of the Part 100 common section plus all the other part of the Magnificent Seven.
So talk us through then, you mentioned there Part 100.
Yeah, Part 100 is the common section. That's the one that has all the basic foundations in there that are common to all the different sector parts. So we did take a lot of time as a group of subject matter experts from across the globe in taking each of the individual TS parts and looking at the common words, the common themes, the common everything, and channeling them eventually into the Part 100. Then those other parts that are, say, the catering part or the manufacturing part, the sort of Part 1, Part 2, the common Part 4, those then have their own sector specifics. Those things that are really, really unique to those parts remained in those parts. So when a company needs to put their PRPs in place, they use the Part 100, get all those basics in, and then use the other sections for those specifics that they have to have in place.
Just terms in, you mentioned there the Magnificent Seven that we're grouping these standards, giving them a collective name. Just as on a you know, maybe from a personal perspective, how big a deal is it to publish seven standards at the same time?
Immense. Absolutely immense, Matthew. To get all of that out at the one time is immense. Immense for the working groups that were working on them, as well as immense for the working world. Obviously, it used to be that those parts would all come out at different times. That's why there was no standardisation. That's why there was contradicting bits and pieces in it. When companies were looking to operate across multiple sectors, one part would say one thing and one part would say another, because they were done by different groups, different teams at different times of reviewing, etc. But to get them all out at the one time is then making that platform for businesses to then implement, maintain, establish all of those things and move forward to make better the standards globally, raising those standards by that common, simplified implementation platform to strengthen the world in food safety.
Now, you mentioned their food safety. Obviously, food, global issue, affects everybody on the planet. And these standards, obviously, the Magnificent Seven, are very important and big deal. Now, standards obviously don't exist in isolation. So how do the standards, this group of standards here, how do they respond to today's food safety challenges and also sort of evolving regulations across the world?
Well, basically, what's been written into them and what's been strengthened and explained are things like food fraud and food defence, and the world is absolutely facing those types of challenges for food. The economic circumstances that we find ourselves in, there's a lot of people out there that are taking certain food groups, food areas and trying to copy them. So these standards have those sort of food fraud and food defence elements in them that will ensure that there's a good strategy that the business can have in place to combat these, to identify these and to try and, you know, not have them happen in their area. Same with supplier management. Today's food challenges are ensuring that your suppliers are doing what you need them to do for you, so that you don't need to worry about the raw materials that you're bringing in. You don't need to worry about, you know, the additives or anything like that that you're needing to put into your products, because you've got a trusted supplier doing that for you.
So just on the regulations, Angela, when you're developing the standard, you know, how do you incorporate that into your thinking?
So as these standards are developed by groups of people from across the globe, everybody that's within those groups have that knowledge of what's happening in their country, whether that be the regulations or ISO bits and pieces, they've got that in the background. So when there's discussions happening on regulation and whether that would be helpful or not within in the standard, those people will be contributing to that discussion and having regulation and the thoughts and needs of their country at their heart when they're feeding into the group, because it is all about subject matter experts and others that come together for that chat and that working on the standard.
Now, Angela, you involved in you played a leading role in the development of this standard series. I'd like you to sort of lift the lid on the process here. You know, what were some of the key discussions or debates that took place during the development of the standards, and how did you go about resolving the differing views?
So when we're doing the discussions and debates on developing these standards, we are under the ISO code of conduct while we're working, and that is always at the heart of what we're doing. That's all about integrity and kindness and ensuring that everybody gets a say and not closing people down. So when we're working, we've got that ethic code going on in the background where we know that everybody's got a voice, everybody's got an option to speak. So it's very cordially done, believe it or not. There's no in a room everybody bashing each other's heads and saying you can't say that. It's done in such a way that everybody gets that chance to contribute and to discuss what's going on. But it's a very democratic process. It's enough people in the room there that are voting on what's been said and what needs to go in, etc., etc. But there's one word and it sticks in my head, and it's logistic units.
Isn't that two words?
Well, one phrase. And obviously, we talk about vehicles, trucks, Arctics, camions in French. But it came out in the end that the easiest way for that to be incorporated across the globe is logistic units.
You're going to give us an insight of just how much time was spent on that particular phrase.
For that particular phrase, I'm not 100% sure, but I know that in part 100, we spent 40 hours on getting the basics of that, a whole week's worth of hours, and the people from part one, part two, part four, part five, part six, etc., in the one place was 40 hours to get the part 100. And then it absolutely then went through more technical reviews, more technical, you know, editorial reviews, all of that. So I couldn't even begin to think how many other hours there were on it. But it's in a lot of hours, and it's not just those hours in the room, it's the hours that you spend on calls at midnight because there's somebody in your team that's doing a particular part from Japan or halfway else round the world. It's those sort of hidden bits that people wouldn't maybe expect take place. It's not just about going across the world to go to a meeting for a day or 2 days or whatever. It's those aspects that happen out with that you've got to manage as maybe a team leader that you know you've been allocated a particular thing to do, or volunteer. It's not allocated. Everybody volunteers for this. This isn't paid. It's all about the people who want to do this for the good of the world.
I mean, I'm making light of it here, but obviously there's a very sort of serious and important side to this, isn't there, about the sort of the investment that's made here in making sure that the standard is as good as it can be. I suppose that's obviously from your perspective, it's a really important issue.
It is. It's making it the best it can be for the future. And it is all about future-proofing food safety going into the 21st century, the 22nd century and beyond, by utilising these groups of people who really want to do this. They want to make it better. They want to make it easier. They want to make it consistent. They want to make it simple for companies to abide by.
So how about the longer-term ambition here, Angela, in terms of maybe looking ahead 3, 5, 10 years? What difference will these standards make?
What it'll make is that companies will look at these who want to put a food safety management system in, and they'll see how easy it is, rather than thinking, oh, it's been a bar before because it doesn't make sense, it's not understandable, it's too confusing, it's too contradicting between the parts that we need. I'm hoping and wanting them to be able to look at the suite of standards and say, absolutely, we're going to put a food safety management system in, and we are going to make safe food utilising this as our platform and basis.
So Richard, just tell me then, you know, how are organisations, how are they expected to put the ISO 22002 standards into practice on a sort of day-to-day basis?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because a lot of sites don't even know that they've come out because of the nature of the fact that they've come out relatively quickly in the end. So a lot of companies are looking for advice and guidance on gap analysis, and a little bit of a heads up onto what they need to do. You know, there's a lot of new requirements in there. So, you know, some companies are putting teams together, and because they're prerequisites, these are the things that fundamentally underpin food safety. So, you know, it's the cracks in the temple that can go wrong, rather than the huge catastrophic issue. So it's not papering over cracks. You know, it really isn't. It's making sure that you've got a solid base to go from. So it's the fundamental pieces of their food safety management system, really.
And how does that work? Talk about food safety management system there. How, you know, how does the relationship work? How are these particular group of standards, how do they work with ISO 22000 itself?
Yeah, well, we call them the Magnificent Seven, and you know, it's a revolutionary thing for how to have seven new standards coming out. We've got the 100, and I was talking to a company yesterday that said, well, we don't really fit into, they do franchise restaurants, and they don't really fit into food. They fit a bit into catering, a bit into retail, and also. But what they were saying was, isn't it great to have the 100? Because that covers everybody. And for their supply chain, their franchisees, things like that, they can have a common set of requirements going forward that you then pick out the additional bits that are very pertinent to you. So transport and storage, you know, if you think about a soft drinks manufacturer, they might be manufacturing the cans through a hole in the wall, and then they're manufacturing food through the next part of the wall. So, you know, it's a bit of a pick and mix, but it's a great pick and mix. So you asked me there about how it works with that. So that's the prerequisite side. It's then intermeshed with the 22000 itself. That gives you the overarching framework. If you look at the 22000, 8.2 says you need to have prerequisites, and they need to be approved by the food safety team. But it doesn't tell you what and how and where. So you really need, well, you absolutely need the two elements. You need the 22K and the PRP standards. And between them, all of them, they make wonderful music.
Now, you talked there about the sort of magnificent seven. In terms of, you know, organisations adopting these standards, you know, what practical benefits will they see from adopting this particular series?
I think the clarity that they can get, they can say, well, that bit is absolutely relevant to us. But I think one of the super things about it is, if they believe and they can justify that certain elements aren't for them and don't apply, it allows them to make that justification and go to the auditor and go to their business and say, well, this is what we've done on this piece, where this bit isn't relevant, but for this reason. And there's a lot of really good elements that will be relevant, and there's a lot of things that might not be relevant. But it's about, you know, ISO is about the justification and looking into the whites of somebody's eyes and saying, tell me about it, explain it to me, justify it. What's the efficacy of what you've done? And that's the beauty of it. In terms of a particular benefit, some of the technical details that come into the food standard, you know, you can almost use some of those elements as a checklist. So you can take, if you've got a cleaning system that's got a CIP, a clean in place system, you can say, well, that, you know, the standard says I've got to have this, 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 and this. And it's not a checklist. It's not something that you just tick off and say, I've done it. But you can work through it methodically and you can say, yep, we've covered that element. Yes, we've covered that element. Or maybe we need to do a bit of extra, an extra bit of a piece on this part of it. And between that, it comes together in a really nice package.
Now, Richard, you talked about sort of the practical benefits there for the organisations adopting this the 22002 series. How about sort of supplier relationships and collaboration and across the supply chain? You know, how do these standards influence those?
Yeah, one of the key elements of the main 22K standard is about communication both internally and externally. And that's one of the massive benefits that we see with the ISO standards. You know, you have that clarity of communication. We have documented systems and it enables you to take goods that are coming in, goods that are going out and have real a clear message on the requirements, on the stipulations, legal requirements, as well as customer requirements, as well as supplier requirements. And it's something that a lot of companies really have to work on. And that's the benefit that they see is when they do that work on it, they see a much more improved system.
Just over time, Richard, you know, we talked there about the organisations, but how about sort of consumer confidence? How might the widespread use of this particular, this new group of standards, how might they impact consumer confidence and also the reputation of the food industry more generally?
Well, yeah, and that's a really interesting one because food safety is a given. We know that, you know, people have a God-given right to have safe food on the market. But more and more, we've got the brand reputation and the brand damage. And, well, you know, we've got social media where, you know, you post something on InstaTwit or FaceCloth. Matthew, you've probably worked out that I don't do social media myself. But
you know, unlike InstaTwit.
Well, exactly. But you know, that negative message gets out there so more than a positive message. If you look back to the horse meat adulteration into beef that happened in the last decade, you know, that bad message got out there and people still remember that. So it takes a lot to change that narrative. So that's what we can do with this standard and this group of standards. You know, we've now got, you know, so many bright lights shone on the food industry. We've got to be cleaner than clean and whiter than white. And this standard absolutely helps with that.
Actually, Richard, you mentioned there that sort of infamous case about the horse meat adulteration. How does the 100 here particularly relate to that?
Yeah, and it absolutely does. And for the first time, we've got some super useful annexes. We've got Annex A and Annex B at the back of the standards. Now, it's useful for manufacturers, but it's also useful for auditors. So what we've actually done at Camden is to help our stakeholder companies is we've created checklists based on those two annexes. And if you think about some of the recent issues that have happened, A, in the food industry, but B, in the world, there's sections in there, you know, checklist sections on cybersecurity. That's so relevant to us these days. You know, data protection, employee control, hazardous material control, defence logistics, all of those help to give food fraud protection and food defence protection to the consumer and to the manufacturer. So, yeah, absolutely it's relevant.
Now, I couldn't let Amanda, Angela and Richard go without asking them about their standards journeys, something regular listeners know we love to explore. So I asked them just that. How and when did their standards journey start? And where are they now? First up, Amanda.
So it started right back when I started work actually in the food industry, and at that point we were working with BS 5750, which is now transitioned to ISO 9001, so quality management systems, and we use that within the food industry because we didn't have an alternative. And now, of course, we've got this great standard, ISO 22000, food safety management systems. And I'm very proud to say that I was actually the first ever approved ISO 22000 auditor globally, and I conducted the very first ISO 22000 audit. And, you know, now that was 2005 when the standard first came out. So now, 20 years later, I'm now chairing this BSI committee on ISO 22000 food safety management system. So, you know, it's kind of come full circle. And, you know, I'm absolutely delighted to still be involved with this great standard and this great project.
Actually, see, when I reflected on my journey in preparation for this, it actually started 15 years ago. I couldn't believe when I actually started thinking about it that it was as far back as then, and it's been quite a journey. I answered an email ad from the CQI about them needing and wanting standards panel members, and I had a quick telephone conversation interview, and I started working on their standards panel for the revision of ISO 9001 when it went to the 2015 version. So it started there. And then it just morphed. It absolutely morphed into being able to go forward through that to other aspects of standards. And then that's how I got into AW90, which is the Mirror Committee in UK for food. And it led to working with the ISO 22000 series. And I ended up on WG11, which is the working group which created the Magnificent Seven. And it's when you're in the committee and you're in the system, which anybody can get into. It's not just for those and those alone. It's anybody can get into working on these standards. It opens up pathways. It's absolutely taken me to management systems. It definitely has underpinned my whole career in working in management systems and the quality and food safety side of the world, and having a real good grounding in requirements. It has absolutely helped me in my own professional development.
What parts of the world is it taking you to?
There's a once-a-year plenary and working group sessions for the food safety side. And I have been to Canada, I've been to Peru, I've been to America. I've been kind of all over that once-a-year. It's absolutely been fantastic. The rest of the time, we do everything online. The advent of Teams has absolutely helped getting the standards, you know, reviewed and worked on. So that's been really, really good.
Yeah, and it's a little bit scary when I talk to companies about this sometimes, because I really do feel as though I'm 150 years old. I started in the food industry at Dairycrest, and in 1984 was doing dairy farm inspections, using checklists, looking for food fraud. And it's amazing how that cycle is repeated back on itself and come full turn. The first standard that I looked at was BS5750. Which was where the auditors used to come and say, I'm here to see what you're doing wrong, and they try and find fault with everything. Fortunately, we have moved on so much since then, and it's a different scenario altogether. And then ISO 9000 series, BRCGS, ISO standards, and have worked with them potentially from, you know, possibly from the other side of the fence as someone being audited. But then as an auditee as well. So now I train lead auditors. So next week I'm in Copenhagen talking to and training some lead auditors that can go and create their own mischief with the standard and the group of standards. I give guidance and advice now to companies on a broad spectrum of standards. So the thing is with ISO, you never really leave it. You know, it's there for life. It's like a tattoo; you can't get rid of it. It's just a wonderful process. You know, it's great people who care passionately, so passionately. You know, we do it voluntarily. We give up our own time. We ask our employees to release us, and they do because we put a compelling case together, and we love it. We just love that standards journey. It's something that we do willingly, and we'd carry on doing it, and until we breathe our last breath. It's something that's always there, and it never leaves you. Maybe we are nerdy. Maybe we need to get out more, but you're not going to change that.
What would you say, Richard, to anyone considering, you know, becoming a standards maker themselves?
Oh, absolutely do it. It's so rewarding. You meet so many new, interesting people, some old and interesting people as well. There's so many different views. I mean, that's some of the things with standards. You get every country has a say in the makeup of that standard. So, you know, if you go to an international meeting, it's absolutely fascinating because there'll be a Japanese delegation and a Spanish delegation and you know, there's absolutely different views we're all divided and decided by two sides of the same coin, really. But it is a great journey to be on. And, you know, I would say to anybody, just do it. Dip a small toe in the water. It's never as cold as you think. And it's a wonderful swim.
My thanks to Amanda McCarthy, Angela Cunningham and Richard Leathers for talking to me about food safety and the ISO 22002 standard series, a.k.a. the Magnificent Seven. And also thanks to them for sharing their standards journeys. Now, to find out more about the themes raised in this episode and about how to get involved and learn to swim in standards, then follow the links in the show notes. And the show notes are also where you can find details of our socials and all the other ways to get in touch with us here on The Standard Show.
You have been listening to an episode of The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.